There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester with Mike Tagliere. As always, you can find us on Twitter at Mike Tagliere NFL and at Bobby Fantasy Pro. How's it going, Tags?
It's going good, man. The NFL draft's over. We were talking a little bit before the show, just saying that I am glad that we finally get to move on to like just kind of the fallout of the draft, seeing where the teams are at, projecting everything. And this is the time of the year where I actually sit down and do my first set of projections. So I'm pretty excited to just be past that portion of it, moving into a different portion of the offseason where we slow down just a little bit.
That's fun and all, man. But the NFL draft is so great. I always feel sad when it's over. I'm glad to get some sleep, though.
Yeah, no, it was a wild weekend, one where I don't think either of us got very much sleep. I know I was working on a lot of stuff, and today I put out an article basically grading every team's draft, going through each of their draft picks, and giving you reasoning for my grade. So hopefully you guys get to check that out.
Yeah, and there were not many A grades, so all of you guys are going to be very upset unless I think you're a Bucks fan. So today we're also joined by Jeff Ratcliffe of Pro Football Focus, an award-winning SiriusXM host. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, always a pleasure, guys. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I mean, it's one of those things you get so amped up for the draft, but in the last like week and a half or so, it was kind of like, let's just get this thing done. You know, let's get Baker off the board. Let's see what happens after that. And because I was ready to move on. But yeah, it's exciting times in fantasy football world.
So Tags and I already had our immediate reactions to the round one draft, where I called a handful of NFL GMs idiots, then proceeded to rebuke people for calling Tags an idiot for not liking your team's draft. I mean, remember, the show was recorded after midnight. I stand by it all anyway. And the most non-idiotic GM, by the way, is John Schneider of the Seahawks. He apparently like hacked into my brain. Isn't that right, Tags?
Oh, well, I mean, they had one of the worst drafts, but there is some good things that take place from Bobby's point of view.
Yeah, so they have three backup quarterbacks, and they happen to be my three favorite backup quarterbacks in football. Not that that really matters for anything, but I love Austin Davis. I love Alex McGough, who was drafted in the seventh round by them. I was really thinking the Patriots were going to draft him, hoping the Jags drafted them. And then my other guy is obviously Stephen Morris. So one of those guys is going to be cut. I'm really hoping the Jags pick him up and make him their starter, because anyone's better than Bortles.
He showed improvement, man. Don't be too hard on him.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And, you know, they have Cody Kessler, so they'll be all right.
Yeah.
Well, they drafted a poor man's Blake Bortles and Tanner Lee. That's cool, too. I mean, he's basically Blake Bortles, but not good, which is saying something about Tanner Lee.
That is so sad. When they drafted that, I thought the same exact thing. So, what a bummer. Oh, well. Tags didn't like their draft either. So here's the game plan for today's show. We're going to do a more broad overview of the whole draft and the fantasy implications that come for it. So we've got six segments planned here. Rookies who saw their stock improve, veterans who saw their stock improve based on the draft, rookies who saw their stock drop, veterans who saw their stock drop, mid-round picks with redraft appeal, and then finally, sleeper rookies with dynasty appeal. Before we get into all that, though, I wanted to take a moment to tell you all about the sponsor of today's show, TeamStake.com. If you're tired of hassling friends and family for your Fantasy League entry fees, try TeamStake. I've been using them for the last few years, and I'm telling you, it makes commissioner life so much easier. They provide fantasy sports leagues with a fully customizable payout collection and payout distribution system at no charge. Seriously, it's 100% free to use. No tricks, nothing like that. Safe and secure transactions, professional safekeeping, and extremely easy to use. All kinds of customizable features. Again, that's TeamStake.com, and it's absolutely free. So, guys, let's jump right into it. Who are a few rookies who stall their stock improve? Tags, we'll start with you, man.
Well, the number one, and I don't know why people aren't kind of putting more stock in this, and it's Michael Gallup. You know, I thought that the Cowboys were going to be severely like hurting by passing on a wide receiver in both the first and second rounds, considering who was on the board. But landing Gallup in the third was fantastic value for them, and I think he's going to walk into that X receiver role. Some people think that Terrence Williams is still going to be the guy in the depth chart, but I believe Gallup's ready to come in and like contribute right away. They need that X receiver, and I don't think Allen Hurns is the solution there. I'm confused at what the Cowboys are doing with the whole Ryan Switzer trade and all that, but I do believe Michael Gallup walks in, and I think he earns the starting role on day one. And I think that he's honestly, if I look at all the wide receivers who were drafted, and like even if you include DJ Moore in that, I would say that Michael Gallup might be walking into more targets and maybe even better targets from Dak Prescott. So I love Gallup, and his stock actually improved for me.
Jeff, what do you think about Gallup landing with the Cowboys? I mean, obviously, whoever landed with the Cowboys was going to be in a good situation. But do you like him better for redraft leagues than DJ Moore?
No, I do not. And I think you look at it from the overall long-term upside of Michael Gallup. You know, for me, it didn't actually improve his stock because I was relatively high on him before. Okay. I had him as my number five receiver. He's now my number six receiver out of this class because there is a guy who stands out as maybe the biggest beneficiary at the wide receiver position. And for me, that's Anthony Miller. I mean, this guy plays the game so dynamically. Six touchdowns on contested catches last year. He is Steve Smith reincarnated. He goes into a great system here where he doesn't necessarily have to be the number one. He can be the complimentary receiver, but he has a fast track to getting on the field, just like Gallup does, in an offense that has the potential to be very exciting this year with hopefully Mitchell Trubisky taking a step forward. You know, we were on air for SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio during the draft, and some of our panelists were saying that they were going to take Mitchell Trubisky over Dak Prescott in best ball leagues this year, which to me was, I think, a little extreme, but the buzz, it's the point of it, is the buzz is building for Trubisky and what Matt Nagy is doing there. So Anthony Miller, to me, stands out as the guy who gets the biggest bump at the wide receiver position. I do like Gallup, though, and I do agree he'll step into some targets there in Dallas.
You've got to love that, Tags.
No, I do. And Anthony Miller was on my list. I have four wide receivers here ready to rattle off, but Gallup was one. I do think Anthony Miller walks in and he's going to be a starter right away. I believe that Taylor Gabriel was never going to be a highly targeted guy. So Miller being the number two in that offense, I'm curious to see how everything's going to work, all the moving parts. Like, where are they going to move him? Are they going to play him primarily out of the slot? Are they going to put him on the perimeter? It's really interesting because Tariq Cohen's going to do some things too. So I love the landing spot for Miller as well. That was one of my favorites. James Washington. No, but the thing, Jeff, I want to go back to that though, because Michael Gallup was actually my number four receiver in terms of like overall skill set and like how I felt that they should be drafted depending on team need. So I liked Gallup before too, but this is more going on like when talking about landing spots and like who saw their stock improve in terms of where I would draft them in a redraft league, because rookies, I didn't want to draft in best ball without knowing where they were going to go. And that's why I think that overall, that's why I was thinking like Gallup actually moves into, I would say he's, I would consider him right in that borderline top 50 material right now.
Whoa. If you had a draft today, Jeff, I know, you know, we have to set all our rankings and do all our projections and everything, but just on your gut, would Gallup be a top 50 wide receiver? I don't think I have him that high.
Honestly, I haven't even thought about that yet. I've been busy constructing the rookie draft board at this point, hitting up best ball. That's sort of like a midweek thing for me to get the best ball tiers all together after this. I would say just quick gut instinct, no. But I understand where he's coming from there. You know, there was a lot of talk, though. I want to go back to Miller. There's a lot of talk about Tariq Cohen playing the Tyreek Hill role. Mm-hmm. What if Miller is playing that role? I mean, we got to talk about that. And if he's playing that role in this offense, because, you know, okay, yes, he could be a slot receiver. I just compared him to Steve Smith, though. And you watch him play. He is Steve freaking Smith. He can go play above the rim. He can play outside. He can play inside. You know, there are comparisons to Sterling Shepard before the draft by some of the draft nicks out there, which I think is a more fair comparison for Christian Kirk, who did benefit from his landing spot as well, but not as much as Miller. Miller is a more dynamic guy in terms of my ball, you know, angry mentality. Kirk is smooth. I really like Kirk, but Miller, if he gets to play that role in that offense, that could be really dangerous. And it's rare we see these rookie wide receivers produce much for fantasy purposes. But, you know, if you look at these guys, who has the most likely fast track to it? Those two guys, Gallup and Miller, are on that list, though.
For sure.
You know, I like Miller. I definitely like Miller. I just think he walks into a situation where there's more competition for touches than Christian Kirk does.
Well, hold on a second. Like, I know I'm jumping ahead here because we're going to talk about rookies who saw their stock drop. I actually think Christian Kirk's stock dropped a little for me in terms of redraft only. I'm not talking about dynasty because I think it's a fantastic landing spot. But doesn't he project as a slot only wide receiver in the NFL?
Not necessarily. You know, he could certainly play potentially on the outside. I mean, I don't think he's a slot only, though ultimately that's where he's going to be viewed. And yeah, I mean, yeah, this year he's not going to play there that much with Larry Fitzgerald there. But Larry Fitzgerald coming to the end of the line, I still think Kirk is the it's tough to say he's the three. Is he the 2B to, you know, J.J. Nelson being the two? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's technically how our depth chart team has it right now. I gave Kirk a slightly higher target share than J.J. Nelson. Of course, not at the depth of J.J. Nelson, but I don't think it's a huge death knell. In fact, I wasn't as high on Kirk as maybe others out there, so maybe that's why I'm viewing him as benefiting, because he did move up my board compared to maybe others.
Yeah, he would have been someone that I was hoping would land in New England. I felt like Christian Kirk would be the ideal guy to just land there, because he...
Washington,
but they got their ideal guy. They got Wes Welker. They got Braxton Berrios is Wes Welker. He is the exact same player. Returns punts. He's a small slot receiver with, you know, good ability over the in the short and intermediate areas of the field. He is a clone of Wes Welker. Look at, like, watch him play. It's the same person. It's pretty amazing.
Is it going to happen this year? Like, should we be monitoring him in deeper leagues?
You know, it's hard for me I really have to shift gears because I'm such in dynasty mode right now.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I really don't, unless injuries strike again, which obviously Chris Hogan didn't prove to be the most durable, and neither Julian Edelman, who's getting up there in age. And when you look at that depth chart, it's not the most awe-inspiring. So would it be completely shocking? No, but I wouldn't place any chips on that either.
So I like the guys you guys said, and I like Christian Kirk as well, but Dante Pettis is my biggest riser at wide receiver because he walks into the lightest depth chart with the best quarterback, and it's really that simple.
I hated that pick when they made it, by the way. I don't like that they traded up for him. I felt like they could have got him staying where they were. But Pettis, now the thing is Pettis projects more as a special teamer. Like, he's going to be fantastic on special teams. He reminds me of Ted Ginn quite a bit. Do I think he could stretch the field? Sure, but they already have that. Marquise Goodwin, they just signed him to a contract extension. They have Pierre Garçon for the stuff underneath. Trent Taylor, they seem pretty happy with. So I just don't think I see Pettis contributing right away. I think that he's someone that might, over time, that they might involve him more in the offense. But I think right now, I think he's going to be like a special teams guy. I could be wrong, Jeff. Like, how do you have this depth chart shaking out? Do you think that he cracks the top three wide receivers in that depth chart?
I think he certainly could. And I think you could potentially look at him as more than just a Ted Ginn type. I think that if you wanted to say there is a Ted Ginn type in this year's class, that he possibly got drafted to be Ted Ginn's replacement there. But we'll talk about him in a little bit. Regardless, I think you're looking at a long-term replacement to Pierre Garçon in that offense, which isn't the worst thing. I'm hesitant to say best quarterback. I'm trying to be a stickler for small sample size right now, and we have a small sample size with a couple players who are being picked widely consensus as QB1s. One of them, Jimmy Garoppolo. The other one, Deshaun Watson. And that's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. It was five games. It was five games. Five. That's it. Five games. So we're taking him as the number three quarterback off the board, number four quarterback off the board, number five quarterback off the board.
A lot of those touchdowns were like toss-ups. They could have been interceptions. I can't believe he threw some of those balls.
It's five games. And I'm not saying, you know, hey, it was a spectacular five games. We know the ceiling now. We have a very real sample of what the ceiling is. But what's the floor? We also saw that in the beginning of the season. The floor is super low. So, you know, could we consider him more of a mid-range to back-end quarterback one with elite overall upside? I think that's probably the better evaluation. And Garoppolo to be going where he's going is just mind-boggling to me. At this point, they still have some work to do, and getting Pettis in there is a good thing, but there's a lot more pieces that need to be put in place.
I absolutely love what you just said about Deshaun Watson. I said we had a dynasty show not that long ago, and I talked about Watson being like the number one or number two quarterback on some of those boards, and I said it's crazy to me. Like, honestly, I wouldn't take him as a top five quarterback in dynasty, and I'm not making that up. Like, I'm not just saying that. I mean, their offensive line is in some really bad shape, and they didn't really do anything. I mean, they drafted Martinez Rankin. I mean, I know he offers some versatility. He could play some different positions, but that offensive line is in some bad shape. And I know they've also got him some weapons. Kiki QT, that was one of my – I love that pick, even though they just re-signed Bruce Ellington. I do like QT as, like, a Tyreek Hill-type receiver, but I'm with you, Jeff. Deshaun Watson, it was five games, and I'm not willing to sell the farm for him right now.
Yeah, for redraft, I'm not sure. He's right on the fringe of a top 10 quarterback for me, and I know a lot of people are going to think that's absolutely ridiculous because he's, you know, ECR number three, but I think he's pretty similar to Cam Newton last year in terms of just not the type of game that he plays, but in terms of fantasy value. He's got the huge ceiling, like Jeff said, but we have no idea what he's actually going to be. We don't know if he's going to return fully healthy. I mean, remember RG3 when he returned was a bum.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable to me that the same people who are all hype on Deshaun Watson are down on Dak Prescott. You can get Dak Prescott for nothing, absolutely nothing. And I understand the weapons aren't what they were. But Dez Bryant, I mean, if you watch the Amazon show, you could see very clearly why Dallas ultimately didn't want Dez Bryant back. I mean, the mistakes that he made, especially down the stretch, were pretty crucial. So it's not like, you know, he's taking a huge step back there. Of course, losing Jason Witten is definitely a big blow. But, you know, hey, this is a guy who's shown it over a larger sample size that he can put up fantasy numbers, especially with his legs. I mean, he scored six rushing touchdowns last year, and you get him for nothing, and you have to mortgage your house to get Deshaun Watson this year. It's just kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, Jeff, so before the draft on Thursday, I wanted to just clear my head, not listen to the rumors that were taking place to, you know, change everything that we've worked on for the past few months. So I was golfing, and someone legitimately, I was with a foursome, and a guy is trying to tell me that Dak Prescott is garbage, that he's not accurate. I'm like, what are you talking? I actually couldn't even talk to him. I was like, can I get into a different cart? Because I'm going to get upset, because Dak Prescott had one of the best rookie seasons. And I think people forget that. And people want to tie it to Dez Bryant. They want to tie it to Ezekiel Elliott. What about Tyron Smith when he got hurt at the end of the year? Like, how did that affect Dak Prescott and the coverage? I think that's why they drafted Connor Williams when tackle wasn't necessarily a need after the signing of Cameron Fleming in free agency. But again, I'm with you in the fact that I want to see more weapons around him. That's the concern right now. Can Rico Gather step up and be the primary tight end? I don't know if he's going to be that guy. Do we know if Gallup's going to crack the starting lineup? Because if it's Terrence Williams and Allen Hurns, we're going to need a lot of rushing value from Dak.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's the same people who were telling you that Todd Gurley was garbage last year.
That's true.
Like, every year they have to find somebody, and just don't look at the stats. Even if you look at the stats for Dak, are they that bad?
No.
22 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions. Okay, that's not horrible.
It's a Cam Newton season.
3,300 yards. I mean, he had more passing yards than Cam Newton. He had the same amount of touchdown passes as Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. He had three fewer interceptions than Cam Newton. He had three fewer sacks taken. Same amount of rushing touchdowns. It's just Cam Newton carried the ball like a running back last year and had an extreme amount of touches there.
Yeah.
That's the only difference between those guys, you know, and it's just mind-boggling to me. But you know what? In the same right, I kind of like that aspect of the groupthink mentality, because I was glad where I got Todd Gurley in drafts last year. I was really happy where I got DeAndre Hopkins in drafts last year. That made my best ball season. Just those two guys alone made my best ball season. You know, let it happen. Just get angry at some of these players and let them fall down draft boards, because I'll take them all day long.
Guys, let's move over and talk about some of the running backs. I think the biggest winner here, I love Royce Freeman. He was my number four, maybe number five running back before the draft, but he landed in a perfect spot. I mean, I know you've got Devonta Booker there, but I think this is Freeman's job. I think he's ahead going into preseason.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think he's an RB2 at this point. You know, people are hitting me up on Twitter because I went out, put out a projection on Freeman that is pretty ambitious, puts him in the RB2 range. And the response is, what about Booker? And I think that's what a lot of people have been asking for a couple years here. You know, where is this guy? He's an okay receiver. That's fine. He'll be involved in that area. But you're Royce Freeman, you're talking about a complete back. He's shown it over the last 4 years, touched the ball a ton there, and maybe you could make a, you could make an argument for dynasty purposes that's a detriment, but how long are these guys ultimately going to last anyway? Mm-hmm. You got to figure you're looking at a four-year running back when you're drafting these guys in dynasty, and anything more is just icing on the cake.
You're right.
So that's, you know, no problems there. He's going to step right in. He Elway's already said he's the early down guy. I mean, there's no question asked here. So he moves way up in terms of rookie drafts for me. I mean, you're talking, I think you could say he's the number seven running back and maybe the number seven overall player. It depends on how you want to attack your rookie drafts, but I have a particular strategy that is very running back heavy early on. So I agree 100%, huge beneficiary from landing spot.
Yep. So like Jeff, for redraft league, would you rather have Royce Freeman or Nick Chubb on the Browns?
Freeman, not even a question.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. No. I love it, and I'm actually working on a piece right now. It's the Dynasty Risers and Fallers after the draft, and Devontae Booker is one of the fallers. And I know there's some people out there that still believe he has a chance to win this job. I think he had his chance in 2016. He blew it. The easiest way for me to put this, if they were playing C.J. Anderson over Devontae Booker, and then they cut Anderson, what do you think his chances are of taking a running back that they took in the top three rounds? I think it's little to none. I think Freeman's an underrated player, first off.
Yes.
D'Angelo Henderson down there, he could play on third down. So I think Devontae Booker is literally just a depth chart guy at this point. So I completely, completely agree with the Royce Freeman take.
Tags, who's a winner or two that you've got from running backs?
Ronald Jones is a massive winner here. And he's honestly, he might be my number two running back in rookie drafts. He might be the number two pick in rookie drafts for me. And the reason I say that, that his stock went up, I was a fan of Ronald Jones. I think people were expecting him to fall into a timeshare, and that would have been fine for a guy of his size and his skill set. You know, a lot of NFL teams are going that way. But when he landed with the Bucks, you know, alongside Charles Sims and Jaquizz Rodgers and Peyton Barber, I'm not worried about those guys. I'm really not. He's part of a high-powered offense. If this offense actually takes a step forward, if Jameis Winston can keep his head on straight, stay healthy, you know, get all the wide receivers involved, the tight ends they have involved so much, you have to worry about the touchdown potential. Is it there? You know, is it like a David Johnson-type ceiling for touchdowns? No, because, you know, they have Mike Evans in the goal line. They have O.J. Howard, Cameron Braid, all these guys. But he walks into a role where he's the guy. I mean, coming into the draft, I felt like he might land with a team that, you know, used a multiple back set. The Bucs aren't that team. They want a workhorse, and Ronald Jones is, he's my biggest riser here. And honestly, like I said, I think right behind Saquon Barkley is my number two running back.
Yeah, I didn't have him very high going into the draft, but you can sure bet I moved him up right afterwards.
What's your take on Jones, Jeff?
I think my biggest concern is his liability in the receiving game is very real. And the fact that they re-up Charles Sims would suggest they're probably going to be using him in the passing game as well. So it does put a little bit of a cap on what Jones can ultimately do for you. So I'm not as high on him, but I'm not as high. I have him at number five, you know, big deal. Five overall in this year's class for rookie drafts. So it's still pretty darn high. It's a great situation for him to, you know, hit the ground running, touch the ball a ton. You know, a number of these guys, we could certainly see 200 plus carries in their rookie season, 250 to 300 potentially touches as well, right in that in-between range. I think ultimately Barkley is the only guy who you could say has not only very real chance, you could just write it down in permanent ink that he's going to be a 300 plus touch guy.
Yep.
Other than that, it would be a little surprising that some of these guys, because there is the potential for not committees, but other running backs on the depth chart taking touches away. And that's what I think we'll see in the passing game there in Tampa Bay.
Man, can you imagine if the Giants would have just gone Darnold? And then they could have got Nick Chubb, or they could have got whoever they wanted in the second round. Darius Geis. They could have got Darnold and Geis instead of getting Lauletta and Saquon Barkley. I just think they really butchered that one. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate. Everyone's been getting a lot of hate for that take, and it's really not a hot take or anything like that. It's really not very interesting because everyone's been saying it. But, you know, there's been so much hate spit at all the people who have been, especially JJ out there, that I just think we need to mention it. Like, I'm sorry, you guys are wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is I'm with JJ's side most of the time on this. Like, in terms of, I do believe that there are times where a team can take a running back higher in the draft and be okay. I really believe that. I think the Jags were one of the teams, like, last year taking Fournette. I'm okay with that. But the Saquon Barkley thing, I'm a little more okay finding out who they got in rounds two or three that they took Barkley. Now, what I would have taken Darnold, obviously they're not okay with their quarterback position if they're taking Lauletta at the start of the fourth round. But, again, I'm more okay with the pick knowing that they got Will Hernandez in the second, that they got Lorenzo Carter in the third, because I think both of those were tremendous values. But I mean, we could talk about the GM not doing what he was supposed to and potentially trading back and this and that. We could talk about that all day, but
you address a position of need, right? You address a position of need. Yeah. I would so much rather have Saquon Barkley and Will Hernandez than Sam Darnold and Nick Chubb. I mean, for me, you address that offensive line, you get an elite level talent in Saquon Barkley, and you get Will Hernandez, who should potentially have been a day one pick at the guard position, a guy who does well in pass protection. I mean, granted, he was at UTEP, so it's not like he's going up against SEC every single week. But I can't really fault it. I feel like sometimes what we get, and this was the nice thing, because I was on air the whole time, just sort of isolated from the rest of the world. You get a lot of groupthink mentality. This happens in fantasy as well. Once one person says something, then everybody, I think that too. I call it the Dave Matthews Band effect, because when I was in college, everybody I knew liked Dave Matthews Band, but I don't think any of them actually really liked them. I think that a lot of people liked them because their friend liked them, and that's what we get with this stuff. So, you know, hey, I get it. I understand that's the take out there. But ultimately, once we see what Saquon Barkley does this year, I think that's going to shut a lot of people up with regards to that take.
I mean, but the thing is, you could have put Royce Freeman in there in the third round and given him 300 touches. And yeah, he wouldn't have been as good as Barkley, but he would have, the difference between them would have been so much less than the difference between Darnold and Eli Manning, who's, I mean, you talk about a need. When you don't have a quarterback, that is a humongous need.
But they think they do have a quarterback.
Well, that's the thing. So,
yeah, but they don't. They haven't had a quarterback for 8 years.
So let me jump in here and say this. I said this on another podcast today. So imagine going back to the beginning of the 2017 season, before a game was even played, and you're the Minnesota Vikings. Pretend that you have the number two overall pick. You have Sam Bradford on your roster. You have Case Keenum. You're looking at it and saying, as a Vikings fan, most of them were probably saying, oh my God, we need a quarterback. Like, draft a quarterback at number two if they had the number two pick. Now, looking back at it now, it's like, well, if we knew Sam Bradford and Case Keenum were going to be competent quarterbacks under Pat Shurmur, we'd probably be okay taking someone else like a Saquon Barkley.
Though, man?
No, I'm not saying it's... No,
when you have a chance to get one of these franchise quarterbacks, you have to do it. They're not going to have a chance again.
But are we going to sit here and pretend that Eli Manning was properly coached the last couple of years?
Yeah, and that's probably the other elephant in the room if we want to talk about it here. You know, last year, Case Keenum was actually a good quarterback.
He was.
And he has never shown that in his entire career, which is why, you know, hey, people saying out there, oh, Denver's fine at quarterback. Are they? What version of Case Keenum are we going to get this year? I really hope they are. I do. But I'm not convinced. In 1 year is now all of a sudden he turned the corner and he's a competent starting quarterback who can do it independent of coaching. So, and I don't know if we can fairly say that Eli Manning hasn't been a good quarterback for the last 8 years, because didn't he win a Super Bowl in that span?
Well, Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl, so we don't want to go down that path.
Yeah, but Joe Flacco didn't win the Super Bowl. Like, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed won the Super Bowl. Eli Manning actually was in there slinging the rock in both of his Super Bowl wins.
Eli Manning wasn't always terrible. He was a streaky quarterback. We always know he went through his stretches where he had bad streaks.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm not... The Giants were not a very good coach team. It's the reason that, you know, you shouldn't want Baker Mayfield to play for Hugh Jackson. You should just root for him to wait behind Tyrod Taylor until Hugh gets fired and then play under a different coach. Because I think a lot of times, and this is the elephant that in the room that nobody ever wants to talk about, is that the coaching makes people think that scouting is bad. Like, that's the truth of the matter. NFL coaching means so much. So to see a player bust with someone, like, you know, going from Jeff Fisher, there were three quarterbacks. You know, you had Jared Goff, you had Nick Foles, you had Case Keenum, who all left Jeff Fisher and became quarterbacks. This is not a coincidence, people. Like, people need to pay attention to coaching a lot more.
And Todd Gurley doing being the worst running back in football, being the best running back in football.
Yeah, it's
he was
it's
not the worst running back in football. he was not. He finished 21st in PPR scoring. I mean, that narrative was overblown.
I'm just talking about in terms of efficiency. I mean, he got a ton of volume, but he did absolutely nothing.
Behind five trash cans, you know, it was there's a lot more to it than that. he certainly wasn't terrible by any means. He wasn't like Lamar Miller last year, for example. He wasn't that bad, okay?
Right, and I think that, I think in the end, it all comes down to saying coaching absolutely matters. So does the talent around you is going to affect that as a running back, but coaching scheme absolutely matters.
Absolutely.
So, Jeff, was there a running back that really rose up your boards based on where they landed?
How about Jordan Wilkins? Yeah. And nobody wants to talk about this one either, but Jordan Wilkins is an interesting name. Obviously goes on day three here to a team that did not have a running back. I don't care what anybody says about Marlon Mack. He is not a running back who that team is going to trust to run between the tackles on any consistent basis. You have Wilkins come in a bigger bodied running back. I mean, he really looks the part at 6'1", 215. He does well after contact. He may not be a burner, but I really don't care about that. 3.3 yards after contact per attempt last year. That was 11th among draft eligible running backs. Can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield, but with Nyheim Hines there as well, I don't think they're going to ask him to do that much there. But if you look at it, who is a deeper name who could potentially surface on the fantasy radar? Why not Jordan Wilkins? It's rare for day three guys. You know, go back and look at last year's day three guys, and there's a whole bunch of no names. There really are at the skill position. So it's rare, but if there was going to be a guy maybe on day three, Jordan Wilkins could be that guy. He's a deeper sleeper, both in redraft and dynasty leagues.
Yeah, these guys can do it. I mean, you remember Alfred Morris? He wasn't even drafted, was he?
Morris?
Honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know, but I can tell you that watching that Amazon Dallas Cowboys show, I am a huge Alfred Morris fan at this point. The dude is real. The dude is still driving a 1991 Mazda.
Yeah, I heard about
he's
that.
So funny, too.
He was a round six pick in 2012. But he just such a good personality, seems like such a good dude, really genuine.
Yeah.
And, you know, currently, obviously, he's unsigned. Hopefully he lands somewhere. But if not, he'll still be rocking that that Mazda regardless.
He's an easy guy to root for sure.
Yeah, Jeff, you know what? You started talking about Jordan Wilkins. I'm like, I need to pull up my notes on him because I didn't do a scouting profile on him, but I watched all these players and I took notes. So my notes on him were better than I thought, actually. It reminded me of Matt Forte when I watched him run. Not necessarily fast, but fast enough. Shifty, knows how to get skinny when going through a hole. Has plenty of lateral quickness, not a jump cut type player. Will hurdle players at times. He could be a late round sleeper. So I would say I agree with you because, I mean, when the Colts were going through that and they draft Hines is not a guy that's going to ever carry a load. Wilkins, you mentioned he's 6'1", around 220 pounds, so he's definitely big enough. And Marlon Mack, the weird part to me, though, Jeff, we didn't hear about the Colts going after anybody in free agency. Like, I thought that they had their eyes on a certain running back, and I was like, you know, with three picks in the second round, they have to take a wide receiver or running back there. And I thought Sony Michel would have been perfect for that team, but I don't think Wilkins would have been the guy that they had their eyes on the entire time. I mean, are they going to sign someone like a CJ Anderson or a DeMarco Murray?
It depends on really what they want to do here. Do they want to spend the money on the position there, or are they really trying to build? I mean, I look at those two and I see Thunder and Lightning. Are they trying to build for the future here with a sort of reimagined Chris? Is this Chris Ballard's plan for the backfield? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question, but if I read the tea leaves, that's what I'm seeing with this backfield. It's intriguing enough. I mean, I'm not overboard. If I look at my rookie draft board at this point, I have Wilkins. Let's see. I have Wilkins as a mid third round rookie pick, right in the range. You're talking like the John Kelly range, Kalen Ballage range of the draft. If you're you know, looking at those guys in that range, then why not take a stab at Wilkins? Because you look at Kelly's appealing because he could be the handcuff to Todd Gurley this year. Mm-hmm. Ballage is basically Kenyon Drake. They drafted the same exact guy, which is kind of, it's really intriguing. And nobody wants to talk about Frank Gore being there as well, taking early down work away from whoever is their lead back. But, you know, of those guys, who has the chance to maybe be the feature early down back quickest? It might be Wilkins when you look at the depth chart.
Yeah.
Guys, let's move over to players whose stock took a drop. I think there's two pretty obvious ones at wide receiver, Courtland Sutton and then James Washington. And, you know, I was hoping James Washington would land in a spot like the Patriots, and where he would get utilized quite a bit. But the Steelers have a lot of weapons. I'm not sure he's going to get quite as many targets there.
I agree with you on Courtland Sutton. Obviously, he's not going to play much this year. But I completely disagree on James Washington. He's actually someone that I think if you're playing even in a redraft league, if you're playing in redraft and you have a deep bench, let's say you're able to keep eight eight guys on there, something like that. If you play in a league like that, James Washington is worthy of a draft pick. And the reason I say that, he's going to walk into Martavis Bryant's role. Martavis Bryant has gone off to Oakland, if you guys missed that. But now James Washington, so many people are thinking Juju is all of a sudden going to be a top 20 receiver. And it's not to say that he can't be, but I don't know how Pittsburgh views him. Are they, because I don't think James Washington's going to play the slot. So they might keep Juju exactly where he played last year, mix him a little bit, move Antonio Brown in and out of there. But James Washington is a better receiver than Martavis Bryant. He may not be as physically, like he's not a burner that way. He's not running a 4.3. Even though he ran a 4.5 at the combine, James Washington can separate on the deep ball. He can track the deep ball over his shoulder with the best of them, and that matches what Ben Roethlisberger does. So, like, when people talk about Mason Rudolph, he throws a pretty deep ball. Ben Roethlisberger can do that mighty well. Like, we saw that against the Jaguars, just hailing that ball up that Martavis ran under. James Washington can do that with the best of them. So I don't think he's going to, like, all of a sudden jump on the radar in week one. But I think that people writing off James Washington because of his landing spot is wrong. Like, I actually like the landing spot.
Yeah, I do as well. 2/3 of his yards last year came on post or go routes. So just get up the field. Ooh. You're right. He ran 4.5 at the combine, but it's a different player, I guess, in track shorts than on the field, because his game speed is right up there with what you want to see. He scored four times of 70 plus in 2015. Like, this is upside. This is Pittsburgh Steelers. The problem, of course, is will he ultimately be the number three? Is Juju going to stay out there in two wide sets? Very likely. So the target volume is going to be low. But I look at James Washington as a best ball guy in 2018, who I'm definitely going to get some shares of, because he screams best ball. All you need is a couple big weeks out of him and you'll get your value, because you're not going to have to spend a high pick on him.
So, Tags, what wide receiver dropped on your board after the draft?
Well, you hit it. Cortland Sutton was a big one. I don't like Christian Kirk so much in redraft this year, but if we're talking about overall whose value dropped the most, I think DJ Chark is one that I don't necessarily like. I didn't like him as a prospect, though, so he didn't drop down my board, but being taken in the second round as a wide receiver, I think people are going to have higher expectations. But going there, I mean, I know Moncrief is on a short deal. D.D. Westbrook, I mean, he's the burner. I know they used to pick on him last year. I think he's more talented than DJ Chark. Keelan Cole's on that depth chart. Marquise Lee. I don't like it. I don't like the roster they've assembled there. A lot of people talk about the 49ers and how they don't have that star receiver. Well, Kyle Shanahan talked about this, and that you don't necessarily need the Julio Jones to your offense as long as you have players who are playing their roles. I don't think the Jaguars know what the hell they're doing with their wide receivers. I legitimately do not believe that they understand how to use them. So I'm not a fan of DJ Chark. I'm not a fan of the landing spot. Right now, I think he's fourth in the depth chart. I don't think he contributes much in 2018. And I think that players that don't play in their rookie year, especially wide receivers, I think they slowly, over time, you just see them kind of underperform for what they were supposed to. Even though I don't think that might not necessarily be the case with Cortland Sutton, because he's going to get take a year to learn from Demaryius Thomas, a player who a lot of people have compared him to.
Now, Jeff, the Packers drafted three wide receivers here. Do you think any of them have a long-term dynasty appeal?
You know, they're interesting receivers. Yeah, but real quick, if DJ Chark is four, then D.D. Westbrook is the five, because D.D. Westbrook was the four going into this. And that's why I'm blown away that people are actually drafting him as high as they are. Keelan Cole is the three. I mean,
you think so?
I know so. I'm 100% certain on this.
I think
Jacksonville
he's the
depth chart.
I'd put him above Dante Moncrief.
Nah, they want Moncrief on the outside in two wide with Lee, and then they'll bring Cole on the field because they like what he's able to do. So, yeah, that's tricky. One of the probably most puzzling things was how far ESB fell. I Equanimeous St. Brown, some people had him as potentially back end day two guy, and he falls all the way down to, he almost fell out of the sixth round. I mean, it was when the compensatory picks started. When he finally goes, he's the third wide receiver taken. And I think it's just tricky when you look at what the Green Bay Packers did here. In a lot of ways, they drafted three players who are a very, very similar profile, bigger body guys, very athletic, in Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Equanimeous St. Brown. But the one difference I would say is Jamon doesn't necessarily have the speed that Valdez, Scantling, and St. Brown have, but they're obviously going for a type here. Could one of these three threaten to get on the field in three wide? Maybe, but I think Allison pretty much would have that that role locked up there as the number three option. Either way, long term, if I had to choose one at this point, just given the fact that they did put a fourth round pick on him, Jamon would stand out. But Jamon has a lot of developing to do. He was not asked to do much at Missouri. And then you're looking at Valdez, Scantling, and St. Brown more as athletic upside guys. It's just tough. I'm not overly ecstatic about any of them, but yeah, Moore would probably be the guy who I would pick.
So, Jeff, is there a wide receiver whose stock dropped considerably for you after the draft?
Well, I wouldn't say considerably, but I have to say I'm not a fan of DJ Moore's landing spot. And
agree.
I put a tweet out about this, and I said the last time that there's been a wide receiver one in Carolina was in 2011. It was Steve Smith. It was Cam Newton's rookie season. Other than that, he's produced either wide receiver twos or wide receiver threes as their best option there. And of course, the rebuttal, but Greg Olsen is there. Okay, did he go anywhere? Isn't he still there? Isn't Christian McCaffrey
extension
there? Like, it's a terrible landing spot ultimately for the short term, potentially a bad landing spot for the long term as well. It's a shame. I really was excited to see where he would land if he got into a good spot. This isn't a great spot for him, so I did have him going down. I agree the evaluation on Sutton as well. He's Demaryius Thomas, and you look at they bring in Deshaun Hamilton. Is he Emmanuel Sanders? I mean, very well could be. That could be how they're viewing it, just trying to get guys in a sort of Belichickian way where you get guys who fit profiles as opposed to, you know, maybe going BPA. You have the types that you're looking for, and they possibly got that with those two.
Yeah, it's really funny because, you know, if you would have told me Moore would have been the first player drafted, I would have been so excited, right? Because he's one of my favorite wide receivers here. I like Sutton a little bit more, maybe Ridley a little bit more than DJ Moore as well. But, you know, this landing spot is just, it's not ideal. Cam Newton is not a very good passer.
Yeah, accuracy-wise, like, I think that's an issue. And, I mean, from a production standpoint, if you're looking in redraft, I mean, I would say that he's up there as one of the better ones if you really must have a rookie wide receiver. But he'll be probably in that 45 to 60 range of wide receivers where I think he's going to walk into 80 targets. Like, I don't think Devin Funchess is the guy who's going to be seeing over 100 targets in that offense. It's going to be spread around. But Newton's accuracy issues aren't going away anytime soon. I think we've learned that through this process, and that's going to lead to some inconsistencies. And he's already got his possession guys, as you mentioned, Jeff, and Greg Olsen, who signed a 2-year contract extension, and then also Christian McCaffrey underneath. So the DJ Moore landing spot is, it's okay. It's solid for volume, I think, but I think he's going to be inconsistent because of it.
Tags, let's go running backs whose stocks dropped. Where are you going?
Running backs, John Kelly's one. The other one is Mark Walton. Those two guys, because running backs, like, it's pretty easy to read the situation there. Like, these guys just essentially became handcuffs. And I think John Kelly has actually landed in a perfect spot. I think that offense is ideal for him to walk in right behind Todd Gurley. He can mix in a little bit, give Gurley some rest when they're up in games. Like, they didn't do that last year very much because they didn't have a running back to do it. I think that John Kelly will be that guy this year, but his dynasty stock took a hit because obviously if nothing happens to Gurley, he's just sitting on the bench. Mark Walton, I don't know what the Bengals are doing drafting a running back there. I don't think they needed a running back. He's essentially like another Gio Bernard on the roster for them. You know, Joe Mixon's the guy there. Gio Bernard's going to mix in and Mark Walton's going to rot unless there's injuries. So those are the two running backs that they just kind of fell off for me, and I don't want them on any of my teams.
Jeff, how do you feel about Walton? You already talked about Kelly a little bit, but do you think this is a decent landing spot for him?
Well, I wasn't high on either of these guys because we have to realize what they are. And I think this is a perfect landing spot for Walton because, yes, he is Giovanni Bernard. He was one of the best pass protecting running backs in the league. That offense does have a role for Giovanni Bernard. So if they move on from him, a player who turns 27 in November, if they happen to move on from him during the span of Walton's rookie contract, they have another guy who they can bring in, a guy who's going to learn under Giovanni Bernard, who was not a very good pass protector early in his career and has been one of the best over the last two seasons. So that one makes sense to me. Wasn't particularly high on him. I think the player who we got our question answered at the running back position is Kerryon Johnson. And I think there are people out there who might be overvaluing him because, first and foremost, this was one of the worst run-blocking offensive lines, not just in 2017, but also in 2016. You have LeGarrette Blount, who, blah, okay, yes, he's there. He'll be the lead back. He's over 30 years old. But Kerryon Johnson, even himself, has admitted that he's going to be a career committee back. He's never going to be a feature back. He's just not really built for that at the NFL level either. So I actually moved him out of the first round. I'm excited of him as a player. I think he'll be fun to watch at times, but for fantasy purposes, it's going to be tough. So I have him at the top end of the second round of my rookie draft board.
Guys, let's move on over to quarterbacks. And the one player that really rose up my draft boards, and believe it or not, Mason Rudolph dropped to the third round, but I just think for dynasty leagues, this is an ideal situation he's going into with the best wide receiver in the league. He's got Le'Veon Bell. We'll see what happens with him sticking around with the Steelers, but it seems that Ben Roethlisberger is going to be out in no time, like a year or two, right? I think Rudolph is a natural fit to take over.
I love that they paired him with James Washington. Like that's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's cool too. Yeah,
to get the duo together. Yeah, and that was I have no idea what the Jaguars were doing when they passed on him twice. I don't know. I mean, the Patriots. I mean, I know it's rough to question the Patriots. I know they've won how many Super Bowls in the last 12 years. I get it. I understand all that, but at some point you have to say Tom Brady's going to retire and we need to prepare. I think Mason Rudolph would have went a lot higher if this wasn't such a quarterback rich draft, but getting him in the third round, I felt that was a steal for the Steelers. So I definitely like that pick. It's where I projected him to go. So it's hard to say that, you know, he would have moved up my board because it's where I had him going to begin with. I think Josh Rosen is an interesting one that kind of maybe moved down a little bit. I mean, I like that they paired him with Christian Kirk, but outside of Kirk on that roster after Larry Fitzgerald retires, there's not much. Like, there's not much to look at. I don't like Chad Williams very much. J.J. Nelson is a guy. Like, the offensive line is brutal in Arizona. They need to rebuild it. So, you know, that's probably someone whose stock dropped a little bit for me.
I mean, Mayfield's going to start at some point in the first year. Darnold, too. Josh Allen is going to take over for Tyrod. I don't know if Josh Rosen's going to start this year at all.
I think Rosen has a better chance to start than Mayfield.
You think
so? Yeah, he could be starting on day one.
Yep, I mean, believe that.
Are we convinced that Sam Bradford's healthy? What have we seen in the last couple of years that would convince us of that? I think all four of those guys are going to play. So that means that the person who landed in the best spot is Lamar Jackson, because he's the one who has the opportunity to sit the longest. He could sit for an entire year. He could sit for 2 years. I mean, it all depends. He could sit for 3 years, and he's the one who needs to sit the most at the NFL level to really learn more about the game. He has the athleticism. He's still off the charts. And for fantasy purposes, you have to love the dual threat ability. And I think he's maybe a little bit underrated as a passer. He's not great, but he's not also terrible. That's the ideal landing spot. I'm not convinced that Mason Rudolph ends up being anything in the NFL level. You know, it's one of those things where they just seem to almost every year now, they're just throwing a pick in the mid rounds at a quarterback. Last year it was Josh Dobbs. I mean, they still have Landry Jones on the roster. So, I don't think we can just anoint Mason Rudolph as the Ben Roethlisberger successor.
There's a major difference between Rudolph and Jones, though.
Well, that's the thing, is like Landry Jones, Josh Dobbs. Like Josh Dobbs, I felt like that was a wasted pick. Like, I actually liked Mason Rudolph in terms of like a developmental guy. I didn't feel like he should walk in and start right away. But he's that prototypical pocket passer. He resembles Roethlisberger in the bigger quarterback who's not necessarily mobile, can throw the deep ball. And it's not saying that he's automatically, it's hard when you're talking about a guy that's not worthy of a top 15 pick at quarterback. Is he worthy of a top 2 round pick? I understand that whole conversation. But I do believe that the Josh Dobbs, that one I questioned a little bit. Like, that just didn't make sense. It was like they were going to cheap. And I think that they were not going to do that again this year. I think they were going to actually just keep looking past it. But then Mason Rudolph just fell to the point where they felt like, okay, let's trade up and get this guy then. So
I want to go back to Jackson really quick as well. I like the narrative of which quarterback is going to sit and learn the longest. And Jackson clearly does need to learn. But also, you know, you see these younger guys and their speed as they get older, the speed is not there quite as much. The agility is not there. And with Lamar Jackson, that's obviously going to be the case. That's the biggest part of his game. So I would rather have him on the field right away, have him suffer with the passing yards, at least for fantasy, because he's going to put up all those rushing yards, the rushing touchdowns. I don't know if that's going to happen if he starts in 2-3 years.
I think it still does. I'm not worried about that part of his game. I'm worried about him learning the game because, yeah, you could have him out there. Who's to say he doesn't get completely annihilated, get hurt, or just completely Nathan Peterman and implode and throw eight interceptions right. in a quarter. You know, I don't know. I think sometimes, too, we have to consider the surrounding talent, the offensive system, and maybe that's an area that some people are overlooking with Mason Rudolph. I mean, you're talking, yes, he had James Washington, he had Marcel Aitman. I mean, he had a fleet of receivers at his disposal in a system that's very much conducive to putting up numbers. Mm-hmm. How does he translate to a pro-style offense? That question has not been answered yet.
Let's go and talk about the tight ends. And Jeff, I'm really curious to hear your take on what the Ravens were doing here. They've done it several times before. They drafted two tight ends, never this early that they've done it, but Hayden Hurst in the first, Mark Andrews in the third. What are they going to do with these guys?
Well, it annoyed me when it happened on day two, because I was excited about the top four tight ends in this year's class, and recorded a podcast immediately after the first round and was talking about, you know, Hayden Hurst and the potential for this year and how good of a landing spot it was. Well, now that all is out the window. I think that if you look at the two of them, he's more the blocker of the two. If you had to characterize him as such, I wouldn't have characterized him as such before the draft. But Andrews is a wide receiver, basically playing tight end, a mismatch on any given play, a complete move guy. So it kind of sucks the value, though, because they're both going to see targets in this offense. If you look at the biggest winner, it's Mike Gesicki for me, and really not even particularly close. He's in a great spot because Dallas Goedert, of course, goes to a position where he's basically Trey Burton for the Eagles this year. Jordan Akins is a name that is intriguing to me as well, though, because he goes to Houston where, you know, if Deshaun Watson is this all-world quarterback, then that's awesome. That is really awesome. He's in a position where he could produce in the short term potentially, although I don't think we're not going to see an Evan Engram this year. That was very much the product of the situation there in New York. And I don't even know if we see a guy in the, you know, mid tight end twos. I think you look to David Njoku's production, OJ Howard without the long touchdowns production, and that's what you're looking at, maybe the top tight end of this year's class. So three or four touchdowns, you know, that it's not going to be a big year for any of these guys.
Tags, what do you think about the tight ends in this class and where they landed?
Yeah, it was frustrating about Andrews landing there with Hurst, because both of them could have produced. And as you mentioned, I think Mark Andrews, when I watch him run routes, he reminds me a lot of Jason Witten, like a younger one, but he can't block. So again, he's a wide receiver. Mike Gesicki is the one that I think could make a rookie impact. And the reason I say that is because you look at the depth chart in Miami. I mean, AJ Derby, he's been passed around by a couple teams. Durham Smythe, they drafted him. Thomas Duarte, I know Jeff and I have talked about that name before. But Gesicki could walk into a role. You know, the Miami offense is changing. I don't know if Albert Wilson and Danny Amendola just automatically take all the targets that Jarvis Landry walked away from. Obviously, some are going to shift to Devontae Parker, but he's someone that I could see walking into a role in day one. I think they just want to get him onto the field. I think that's ultimately the thing. Even though he's a developmental guy, even though he's really raw, he's at least a big catch radius for Ryan Tannehill. So he's the one. But outside of that, I pretty much agree with Jeff. But if I want to comment on a tight end, though, who really gained value in this draft, it's Nick Vannett. Out of Seattle. Like, I've been preaching this. I've been saying that he's a buy low. They drafted him extremely high on day two a couple of years ago, and he's been sitting behind Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson. Both of them left. They did draft a tight end, Will Disley, but he's a blocking tight end. He's not doing anything. So Nick Vannett, I mean, they didn't draft a wide receiver either. So Vannett is someone that I would actually say I'm pretty excited about. I think that he gained a lot of value from this draft.
Now, I'm looking at the wide receivers and, you know, maybe guys, every single year we see a few guys who are drafting third, fourth, fifth round who actually contribute as rookies. And you don't really want to draft them in redraft leagues, but in terms of dynasty, somebody who could help you right away. Obviously, the Colts depth chart is barren, and they drafted a guy in the fifth, another guy in the sixth, Deion Kane. Jeff, what do you think about these guys?
Deion Kane is a prototypical Clemson receiver, so you have boom or bust potential with him. You know, Darius Fountain, I mean, hey, he put up big numbers at a small school level on a very small sample size. Neither one of them are guys who really stand out to me as potential fantasy options in 2018. I think if you're looking in that range after day two, the obvious name for me would be Antonio Callaway. If things are put together in Cleveland somewhat well, and obviously they haven't been over the last 2 years, if he can keep his nose clean off the field, which, you know, there's a lot of stories about this kid. He has not had the best track record for sure, but he also has recently had a child, as Tags and I can certainly attest. That's a game changer for sure, and it does put life into a different perspective. So perhaps he turns a corner. We've seen it with other players in the past, and the fact of the matter is, had he not had the off-field issues, would it have been completely shocking to have been talking about Callaway as a first round pick? No, probably more of a second round pick, but still, as a fourth round guy with that sort of talent, that's intriguing. I would also say, you know, going through the list here of guys in that range, that, you know, we have to obviously keep our eye on the Green Bay guys. You know, as I mentioned before, Jamon Moore is the guy who stands out to me. But if somebody goes down, if something happens to Davante Adams, if something happens to Geronimo Allison, who's the next man up on that depth chart? And it seemed, as I was doing live projections during the draft and evaluating the depth chart on the fly, it seems like they're trying to sort of, all right, we tried this Michael Clark, you know, D'Angelo Yancey, Trevor Davis thing mm-hmm. out. That didn't work. Let's bring in these three guys now. And that means one of them, if one of those two starters goes down, one of them, you know, there could be a week this season where all of a sudden for DFS, that's all we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if Aaron Rodgers is healthy. So I think of the day three guys, those are the two who really stand out to me the most.
Yeah. No, I mean, I the Jamon Moore thing, I agree with you. And in terms of what the Packers did last year, what they did this year, it's like they're doing the same thing. And so many people are saying Equanimeous St. Brown is more talented than Jamon Moore. And it's like, you know, the whole Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams thing last year. I think the undervalued name here is Geronimo Allison. I've been getting him in best ball leagues with my last pick. Nobody mm-hmm. is paying attention to him. And as of right now, I still think there's a chance they sign Dez Bryant to a one-year deal. But as of right now, Geronimo Allison is on the field in three wide receiver sets. And if you're on the field with Aaron Rodgers in three wide receiver sets, which is the majority of the time, he has fantasy value. And I think that he's someone who's going extremely undervalued right now.
You know, he's on the field in two wide sets as yeah. well. Randall Cobb yeah. comes off the field.
You think that okay. Yeah.
Nobody pays attention to that, but Randall Cobb comes off the field in two wide. He only plays slot. He does not play outside. So Geronimo Allison is an every down player, and you getting him at the very end of best balls, that is stealing if the depth chart stays as it is right now. It's absolute stealing.
That's good info. I thought that Cobb was still playing in two wide receiver sets, but you would know, like the stats at PFF are awesome. So,
all right, let's go super deep sleepers, guys, to close this out. Jeff, we'll let you go first here.
Well, go beyond the draft. I think Josh Adams is a name that obviously stands out. People potentially had him as a day three pick out of Notre Dame. Of course, he ran behind an amazing offensive line. So don't take the stats and say, oh, why wasn't this guy drafted? He's an upright runner. He's a sort of throwback. Maybe, you know, a great, interesting comp in terms of style would be Eddie George. He's not Eddie George, but that's what he kind of looks like. We saw last year that Corey Clement comes in as a UDFA for the Philadelphia Eagles and is able to put up strong production there. So it's not out of the question that Josh Adams makes somewhat of an impact here. The other name who I think is really intriguing at the running back position, or is it tight end? Or is it fullback? Or is it kicker? Or is it punter? What is it? Jalen Samuels. I think he's a running back. He has said he's a running back, despite the scouting community saying he's a tight end at 5'11". Yeah. Jalen Samuels can do everything for you. And I think, hey, would it be completely out of the question that he somehow becomes the handcuff to Le'Veon Bell? No, now that's not going to where I'm going to put him. I'm not going to put him there initially, but there's something about this guy. He's got the size, the power. He has the ability. You know, we know this team covets running backs who can catch the ball out of the backfield. So there's something to that, and I'm just going to keep a very close eye on what Mike Tomlin says about Jalen Samuels, what the organization plans to do with him, because he is a really, really interesting name.
Do you have a few names you want to share?
Yeah, no, for sure. Deion Kane was one name I wanted to mention because I feel like the Colts depth chart, that's an easy one to climb. And it's possible that he starts opposite Ryan Grant in three wide receiver sets with T.Y. Hilton playing out of the slot. So I definitely think Deion Kane's a late round one. One name that nobody's talked about is Justin Jackson. He was drafted in the seventh round by the Chargers. And this offseason, the Chargers have talked about, you know, getting a better backup for Melvin Gordon. And to know that they waited until the seventh round to grab Jackson, you know, it's not exactly like, well, we made it a big priority. But Jackson was someone who was expected to go in that range because because he's got a lot of miles on his tires. He was a three down workhorse at Northwestern. He's a little smaller than you'd like for a three down back, but he can play it. I think he walks into the backup role behind Gordon, whereas Austin Eckler is kind of just this change of pace guy, and they view him more of as like a Brandon Oliver than a backup like Justin Jackson. So we talked about Equanimeous St. Brown, Kalen Ballage a little bit. Yes, Frank Gore's there, but I think he came there just like to close out the career. I honestly can't see Frank Gore getting more than 100 carries this year. I don't think that he makes a big impact. Ballage is like that upside player where it's like if you're looking for someone in Dynasty appeal that potentially has that upside, he's got the body, he's got the athleticism. He's more of a receiver than he is a running back, I would say at times. And Kiki QT, Dynasty appeal comes down to talent. His landing spot wasn't ideal. I don't like the landing spot, as a matter of fact, in Houston. But QT is he's a player that's got this speed on demand. Like, you know, looking at 40 times and stuff doesn't interest me all that much. Like, I'll look at them and I want to know them. But at the same time, when you watch QT on the field, he has that on-demand speed button that he just hits whenever he wants it. And I think he can be really good with a creative offensive coordinator and with all the other parts they have in Houston. It's just tough to see it, but those are some of my favorite, you know, guys that weren't taken in the top few rounds.
One guy for me is a tight end, Dalton Schultz, out of Stanford. He was drafted in the fourth round by the Cowboys, and, you know, Witten's retiring, obviously. They've got Rico Gathers there, but we haven't seen him healthy. If he's not healthy, I think Schultz could have a path to playing time, and he's not, you know, an all-around tight end. He's not the greatest blocker, but he can be used in the passing game, and that's what fantasy is all about. So he's a guy I'll be taking in the sixth, seventh round of my dynasty drafts.
I think he has a lot of similarities with Jason Witten, and I think my favorite stat of all of the pre-draft process was Dalton Schultz's stats over the last 3 years here. 55 catches for 555 yards and 5 scores. That is awesome. I love that. I wish he could have the number 55, but I do see some similarities with Jason Witten. Now, I don't think he'll ultimately be Jason Witten. By the way, you said the words Rico Gathers and people started immediately foaming at the mouth. I think we definitely need to pump the brakes with this guy. It was preseason, okay? It was preseason. We really haven't seen anything yet. There's stuff to be intrigued by, but I don't know what they're ultimately going to do at the tight end position this year. It's going to be tough because Schultz does face a bit of a learning curve here coming to the pro level. He's interesting, though. I do agree he's an interesting name.
Plus, he had Cooper Rush throwing the ball, so anyone would do that with Cooper Rush throwing the ball, right? The one other deep sleeper I wanted to talk about is Rock Thomas, who went to the Vikings as an undrafted free agent. Yeah, they've got Dalvin Cook, they've got Latavius Murray, but you know what? Jerick McKinnon had a role there last year, too, and he played in that spot. They got to replace him, and this is a pretty easy comparison to make between Rock Thomas and Jerick McKinnon because he's a pass-catching back who's electric.
Rock Thomas, was he drafted? I didn't think he was drafted.
No, he was undrafted.
Yeah, I thought he was. Yeah, Holton Hill was one that the Vikings got as an undrafted free agent too, which I'm upset about. But yeah, no, I mean, that's an interesting name. He's one of those metrics guys where it's like, I just think it's too far down. And it did require Jerick McKinnon to have that role. Dalvin Cook obviously going down with an ACL. That didn't help.
He wasn't getting touches before then.
But one question I have, because I know we're close to the end of the show here, I wanted to ask both of you guys, do you think there's any chance that the Carolina Panthers walk into the season with Cameron Artis Payne as their primary 1-2 down back? I think that they have to sign C.J. Anderson like this week.
I don't see a need to necessarily sign C.J. Anderson. You're not asking for a ton here. You're not asking for him to carry the ball 25 times a game. And they have shown that they've liked him enough to keep him on the roster all of this time, even when, you know, he really offered almost nothing. You know, there was a reason why he wasn't dressing. You know, he did nothing in special teams. So if Stewart was active, then yeah, he wasn't dressing. So I don't think that's completely out of the question whatsoever. By the way, the Vikings also UDFA signed Mike Boone, who the testing numbers are freakish for this kid. 42-inch vert, 11.7 in the broad, 4.44 at his pro day at Cincinnati. You know, he's an interesting name. They have their type too. You know, we're starting to see this with these teams. They have their type, and Minnesota likes these really, really athletic guys. Maybe, you know, something works out. I comped him to a very poor man's Kareem Hunt. When I see Mike Boone play, that's what I see out of him. Now, you know, definitely not Kareem Hunt, but has that similar playing style and is capable of catching the ball out of the backfield. So you super deep dynasty league people, maybe just a really, really, really deep name that probably will never pan out, but you should know it anyway.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Cameron Artis Payne got a bunch of touches, but I think more likely it's going to be someone like Lamar Miller, who's cut by their team, and the Panthers just pick up whoever's cut. There's going to be plenty of guys cut, plenty of competent starters, and not starters, but plenty of competent running backs, whether it's, you know, CJ Anderson's already out there, and DeMarco Murray's already out there, but I think it's going to be someone like Lamar Miller rather than Artis Payne.
Well, that's the thing with me, right, is like, you know, we talked about Jonathan Stewart, like he played a small role in the Panthers, but he really didn't. I mean, these are a couple guys that he had more carries than last year. Devonta Freeman, DeMarco Murray, Deion Lewis, and think about it, like, Christian McCaffrey didn't miss any time, so that was his role. Like, he's not going to be using the receiving game, but that was he had the 19th most carries in the NFL, 198 of them. So I think it's a big role that they're asking Cameron Artis Payne to fill. I can't see any way that, I mean, the whole fact that, you know, he couldn't contribute on special teams and they kept him around does say something, but looking for potential landing spots for CJ Anderson, that just makes so much sense.
All right, guys. Well, that's all for today's show. As always, Jeff, it was a pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. And we've got another show coming up this week. We're going to be doing our rankings post-draft show. Justin Boone's coming on. So make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. And thanks again to the sponsor of today's show, TeamStake.com. 100% free to use, fully customizable payment collection and payout distribution system at no charge. That's TeamStake.com. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.